This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's subject is osteoporosis from the standpoint of exercise. We're often told to exercise for the benefit of our bones, but that has actually become a controversial proposition, as we'll discover in today's podcast. Today, we're going to talk to an individual who is an expert on the subject of the relationship between exercise and osteoporosis. And he has developed a system which is designed to augment bone through the use of a very, very targeted biomechanical stress. He is Dr. John Jaquish. And after successfully having an experience with his own mother's osteoporosis, he wrote a doctoral dissertation in biomedical engineering research at Rushmore University, and he conducted 4 years of testing with human subjects using a device which he designed, put into production, and since has been placed in over 240 clinics worldwide. It's called osteogenic loading, and it's now helped over 12,000 individuals with their bone health. And he is currently advancing osteogenic loading research and speaking worldwide about its implications. So in light of the fact that May was National Osteoporosis Month, a little belatedly, but still on topic, here's Dr. John Jaquish. It's a pleasure talking to you, Dr. Jaquish.
Dr. Hoffman, thank you for having me.
Sure, it's my pleasure. So tell us how you got into this. You actually had a personal experience working with mom, who was diagnosed with osteoporosis.
That's right. That's right, yeah. It happened as simply as you explain it, and most people imagine how the conversation happened. I came home. My mother seemed very upset, and I asked her what was wrong, and she said, my doctor told me today that I have osteoporosis, and she's a bit of a hypochondriac, so I had heard she was going to die before, but she was just overreacting. But I realized, once you got an actual medical diagnosis, that's a different story. And I said, well, let me take a look at this. I want to learn a little bit more about it. And in looking at osteoporosis and what that dysfunction of bone really is, I came to the conclusion that this is really a disease of deconditioning. And everything that is deconditioned can become reconditioned. There's a possibility to recondition that tissue. So as I began learning about what bone responds to recondition itself, I noticed that high impact forces were the greatest thing that are absorbed into bone to trigger the bone to grow. So the joke I first gave her was, Mom, you should just become a gymnast. Of course, she was in her 70s. She did not think that was funny at all. But that's what brought me to developing the world's first impact emulation device. So what the device was to do was to put an individual into positions that they would naturally absorb high impact forces, and then allow them to self-load in these positions, and then look at a computer screen which gives them biofeedback, tells them how much force they're putting through that respective kinetic chain, be it the arms, the legs, the spine, and then look at what levels of loading were going through those kinetic chains, and thereby ensuring that we're passing some certain thresholds that we've seen in research to trigger bone growth. So I had the benefit of having many years of research behind me. There's all types of research that suggests physical activity had been advantageous to be used on bone. And so I took it to the most extreme degree at which I had seen the relevant dose response, that of nearing high impact. And therefore, within 18 months of building the prototype, my mother went from full-blown osteoporosis to the bones of a 30-year-old. And she just turned 80, and she still has a T-score of 0 in both the hip and the spine.
Wow, that is impressive. But let's get the elephant out of the room here, because as you probably well know,
that's right.
There was a recent article that garnered a lot of publicity. It was in the New York Times, and it was written by their science writer, Gina Collada. And the headline was, "Exercise is not the path to strong bones." And I, of course, took great umbrage of that article. And, you know, let me just read our listeners. I'm sure you're familiar with it. But what she says is, misconception. All you have to do is walk or do even the most modest strength training exercises to build strong bones. Actually, exercise has little or no effect on bone strength. It sounded too good to be true, and unfortunately it was. Many public health groups, professional societies, and health sites on the internet promote an exercise prescription promising it will stave off weak bones, but osteoporosis researchers know the advice is not backed up by rigorous studies, and on and on and on it goes, basically downplaying the effects of exercise. And you say?
Well, I can answer the question either way. There needs to be a relevant dose response associated with any recommendation. So some physician can say to you, aspirin can reduce your pain. You know, let's say you have a headache or a joint ache or something, you take aspirin. Well, if you took 5 grams of aspirin, it could kill you. If you took 1 microgram, it probably would have no effect. So there is a relevant dose response, and there's some great research which really highlighted how much loading it takes to trigger bone growth. Through the hips, specifically, it was out of Bristol, United Kingdom. And the researchers in that project determined, using accelerometers and blood tests of individuals of a wide age range and looking at their activity, that you need to exceed, and this is something the listeners should remember, this is very important, they need to exceed 4.2 multiples of body weight before triggering any bone growth at all.
Mm-hmm. That's
a very high number.
And that may be why many studies suggest that some great exercises, you know, like cycling, for example, great exercise, good cardio, and also swimming. I mean, I love swimming, and I swim, you know, lap after lap after lap. But sure. Studies suggest it's not doing a lot for my bones.
Probably nothing. It might be doing some great things for your circulation. It mm-hmm. might be doing some things for your musculature, cardiac health, all kinds of great benefits. In no way, I don't think anyone is suggesting that exercise is all of a sudden not good for you. But to be relevant to bone, you need to exceed 4.2 multiples. So then the question becomes, how do I get that? Well, in a conventional exercise discussion, there's really one place and only one place where traditionally individuals have been able to go through that type of loading, and that's high impact.
Mm-hmm.
So not many people go to a leg exercise machine and put 4.2 multiples of their own body weight on that machine before they start using it. Usually, I think there's some American College of Sports Medicine reports that the 95% confidence interval mean, so like 95% of people who exercise are using 1.3 times their body weight with their lower extremities. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would mean for me, I'd have to leg press over 600 pounds. I don't think that's happening.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And, and then you also have to look at the mechanics of the exercise. If you're doing a leg sled, you got to take 45% of the weight off because a lot is being dissipated through the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So, these loads are very high to be relevant to bone. And so when I looked at high impact, gymnasts are able to build incredible bone density. And they're really the group that stands aside from any other group that's easy to test. And gymnastics is very important because the rate of absorption and the style of absorption of force coming from the floor as they contact the ground, that is very easily measured because it's repeatable. They go through the same kind of movement pattern and activity over and over and over again. So it's great for researchers to analyze. So what happens is these individuals are able to grow bone density very high. They also are very prone to injury. So it goes both ways. They can have a great effect or they can have terrible injuries. So the question I asked when I was looking at developing this device to treat my mother's osteoporosis was, how do I get the benefit of high impact without the risks of high impact?
Right.
And that was the impetus to develop the device.
Mm-hmm. Because clearly, I mean, you could be LeBron James and, you know, do a slam dunk, you know, 4 feet off the hardboards, and that's going to do a lot for your bones. However, you know, even LeBron James is going to pull up lame from time to time, you know, after that kind of pounding, and he'll have to retire by the time he's 38. So how do you do that in an elderly individual, you know, the vast majority of whom are the candidates for osteoporosis reversal?
They need to, it's very safe. The therapy is very safe for individuals of all ages. I've seen people over 100 years old use the device. It's all self-applied loading. So think about it this way. If you make a fist and you look at your fist, can't ask yourself this question. Can you squeeze that fist hard enough to break your own finger? And I'll say that when I'm speaking at a retirement community that has just put in one of these devices. And the answer is, no, I don't think I can. Most of these people in this retirement community say, I don't think you can break your own finger by squeezing a fist. That's because we all have something inside of us called neural inhibition, which means if something starts to become uncomfortable and can get near a point of injury, that neural inhibitory process starts shutting muscles off, and you won't be able to put any more force than you can tolerate without injury. So we use those neural inhibitory forces in the body, those processes in the body, so that when individuals engage in osteogenic loading, they are putting whatever loading through joints and bones that they're comfortable with doing, and they cannot go ahead of that. And then they have a computer screen in front of them to tell them where they are and where they were last time, and then record all of their data so that it gets reported back to them and they can see how they're progressing.
And I guess it's highly individual because, different strokes for different folks. You know, for a 45-year-old woman who's in pretty good athletic condition trying to prevent osteoporosis, they can apply a lot more force than someone who is 85, maybe has a little bit of high blood pressure, you know, a little bit of mild heart issues.
Sure.
You know, who can't really slam the device around.
Well, funny you mentioned that word. I'm glad you brought that up. You got to make sure that there's no slamming. Everything is slow loading.
Okay.
So, yeah, the device is designed to encourage very slow entrance and exit. No matter how conditioned the individual is, you want slow entrance and exit so biofeedback can take place. Because otherwise, you're not emulating impact. That's just impact.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to avoid high impact and get the benefits. So interestingly enough, though, if you slowly load, you're able to handle much more force than if you are abrupt in the loading, because there is a level of neural inhibition with the discomfort as you rapidly approach peak loads. But if you allow with a potentiating process through a slow loading experience, if you allow your body to be comfortable as you're loading slowly, the number becomes much higher, and you get more bone compression, thereby stimulating more growth.
So what's happening at a scientific level? Because, you know, we know about the osteoblasts and the osteoclasts. Is there a science that supports this, animal research, human research, that shows that actually something's happening in the body when we apply these loads?
Yes, that's well-researched. What happens is as bones receive axial force, so force along the axis. So if you look at your upper arm from your shoulder down to your elbow, that's a line, that's the axis of the bone. So if you apply load not on the side of the bone but end to end, you can deform the bone matrix. So think about that spider web or a honeycomb looking structure that makes up the middle of the bone. As all those little walls inside the bone begin to bend, the osteoblasts become stimulated to bring in minerals and build more of those small walls to reinforce the inner bone matrix.
And so, you will see results in terms of bone density, but we know that bone density isn't the end-all and be-all of bone strength. There's also bone strength, which may be an independent factor. There are actually some drugs, for example, fluoride, that makes it appear that the bone is stronger, but the bone is actually more brittle. In this case, you're actually creating more of these little, I think the word is trabeculae, which are like little lattice works that help to, the lattice works in a bridge that seem, make the, you know, the bridge may look delicate, but because of all the lattice work, it's very strong.
That's right. That's exactly what happened.
Okay.
And the good news with going and speaking to physicians about this, there's a lot of questions when anything new comes out, and there's a lot of concern from physicians because they want to make sure that they're referring their patients to something that's going to keep the patient safe, that's going to be the best option. So they want a lot of data. And I don't think there's anything that has been more researched in the space of osteoporosis than loading on bone. So what I've done is created a venue so that we can just do that safely. So it's, we're harnessing 100 years of research, but we're doing it in a safe venue that that now almost anyone can have access to.
So is there additional payoff in terms of muscle strength, balance, agility? Because, you know, that's certainly an issue for some older individuals. They break bones not just because their bones are thin, or less dense, they break bones because of loss of coordination and balance. So is there a strengthening aspect to this as well that may help? I mean, ultimately, the goal is not just to strengthen bone or increase a DEXA score. It's to reduce fractures and reduce falls.
Right. So because that's an awesome question. Thank you for asking that. So because these loads are created by the musculoskeletal system, muscular tissue is forced to engage to a much higher degree than normal because it's in an optimized position. So the musculature changes from a density perspective and is capable of a higher power to weight ratio. It's called myofibril adaptation of muscle. Tendons and ligaments become thicker around the joint capsule. So if someone has a dysfunctional joint, typically the dysfunction itself, like if you have osteoarthritis, if you've worn down the cartilage in the joint, we're not going to be able to grow that back, but what we can do is add strength and thickness to the tendons and ligaments that surround the joint. Thereby, there can be less discomfort over time in that joint because it's better supported. So one way to think about this from a fracture prevention standpoint, because ultimately doctors aren't trying to reduce the diagnosis of low bone mass. They want to keep people from fracturing. So the diagnosis is kind of irrelevant. We want to stop people from having fragility fractures. So what we're doing is really training the musculoskeletal system in every individual so that they become impact and fracture resistant. So they're able to, and this is another important word, decelerate when they contact something where they would normally be absorbing impact. Thereby, not only do they have higher bone density, but they're able to mediate the load that gets into the inner bone matrix with the rest of the musculoskeletal system, the thicker tendons and ligaments, and the more powerful muscular tissue.
Is there a point of no return for some people, say people with advanced osteoporosis who perhaps have had compression fractures or spiral fractures of the hip, where, you know, it's too little too late to turn things around with this technique, and they're not even suitable for it? Or is it, you know, something that virtually anyone can benefit from at whatever level they enter it?
Another great question. This is something that someone can try at any level of function. There's no downside to trying. It's not going to hurt somebody if they use it properly. But what I would urge everyone to consider is you need to be relatively pain-free and relatively ambulatory.
Okay.
So, like, the individual you may be describing is so kyphotic, meaning hunched forward, that they can't stand up straight to do the spinal movement, or they can't sit down in a chair. So, yes, it is possible to be so dysfunctional, let's say wheelchair-bound, that they can't really get up and move around, that they may not be able to engage. But this is a very deconditioned individual that you're describing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it sounds like 95% of people can utilize it. All right, so our listeners know that we divide these podcasts into two parts. I think we've set our stage for the discussion in part two, where we're going to drill down and find out what it's really like. What is an OsteoStrong session? Where can you access this therapy? What does it actually entail? Our guest is the developer, a biomedical researcher, engineer, Dr. John Jaquish, and we're discussing biomechanics and the OsteoStrong system, which is available at many locations across the country. It's revolutionizing the natural approach to osteoporosis, drug-free. Can be used, obviously, as an adjunct to drug therapy, but it is, at its core, a natural means of slowing and reversing osteoporosis. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'll be right back with part two on the subject of exercise for osteoporosis. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.